a wall of sound, a wall of sight, bass beating through the soles of my feet. Even in the recoil, the buzzing world was clear in there. When the bass boomed, I saw follicles. Electronic music, Oliver, is something else I wish you could experience. I say this without mockery. It imitates life. Crashes and peaks, the rise and fall of tension. I might call it wondrous. So much motion, so much sweat, so much detail. It was overwhelming. I felt I could see the veins of people, the very tissues of them, almost down to their bone marrow. They basked in what the DJ was spinning out. It was as if I almost understood them. "Don't stand in the doorway!" Fika dragged me across the floor, squeezing us between rising torsos and jumping feet. Not for the first time, I wished I could see lights. "Where are the tables?" "Over there!" She pointed upward, toward a stage. "Why are we shouting?" "It's a club!" I focused on the stage. She meant turntables. There was Owen Arbenz, performing in a vest and a flat cap, jamming with a laptop before him. Perhaps it reflected him as he reflected it. The quietest student in Bernholt Regen, making more noise than anyone in the room, transferring all the sound and volume he could want through the speakers. Owen Arbenz looked up, caught sight of us, somehow. Perhaps because we were standing still. Perhaps because Schicksal, fate, is strange. This time, he did not retreat. He waved and mouthed hello at us. Behind me, Fika's face curled into a smile. A real one. Owen Arbenz opened his mouth wide. The noise showed me his teeth when it echoed inside his cheeks. Showed me his gums and two empty sockets where Lenz had knocked his teeth out. And showed me one more thing. Owen Arbenz had no tongue. At the bar after his DJ set, Owen Arbenz blinked at me, moved his mouth. No sound came out. Moved his fingers in signing. His sister translated for him. "He wants to know if you'd like to go somewhere quieter." "Not in particular." He laughed at me, a laugh much stronger than a tongueless boy had any right to. I'd thought he was shy. I didn't feel like laughing now. I did not want to think of why he was tongueless. I did not want to think of my mother. We weak-hearted fools. People are born without things all the time, really. It probably had nothing to do with her, nothing to do with the place that raised me, with that damned laboratory, Ollie. Fika cussed, grabbed the hands of Owen and me. She led us to the ladies' room, much to our mutual humiliation. There was a line as long as any I'd ever seen. Fika stomped her way through it. A few girls whistled and jeered as she shoved us all into a bathroom stall. "Yeah, yeah, and one of them's my brother," Fika cackled evilly. "Ew!" "Well, get on with it, Brilla." She folded her arms, leaned against the door. "Here's that golden opportunity you rapped for." And so it was, while we two were standing on either side of a toilet, that I finally thanked Owen Arbenz for handing me my goggles before my suspension. "Thank you for handing me my goggles before my suspension." He blinked at me, moved his hands. "He says no biggie." I shook my head. "I'm grateful to you. And sorry he hurt you after." "He doesn't want an apology or gratitude." "What do you want?" Owen stared at me. Slowly, Carefully, he moved his hands. He just wants it to stop. Lens, to stop. Stop, Owen mouthed, holding up his palm. Owen Aben's story is not unique, apart from his tonguelessness. His muteness has always been part of him. Some people are born without things. There's not always a laboratory to blame. There's no reason for me to recall my mother and the scars I have. Lens Monk has hated Owen for as long a time as the Arbens can remember. Of course I was never Lens's only whimpering target. Of course not. Although Owen spent much of his youth in sign language camps, he is not deaf, just as I am not blind. He attended public school, became accustomed to writing his thoughts out on a whiteboard he carried with him. He has forsaken this board for silence at Bernholt Regen. Silence is harder to mark. At the age of 7, Owen attended the same Grundschule as Lens Monk, not far from our homes in Ostzig. I was elsewhere then. One of Owen Arben's earliest childhood memories, Lens Monk pushing him down a playground staircase, pressing his face into gravel. Not a biggie. Children push. Fika helped him up. Pushed Lens in return. The way they speak of it, Lens Monk was a bulky boy, shiny with grease, notorious for bowling kids over, unaccustomed to being shoved back. Fika was already a kid to be reckoned with, despite her pigtails. I can be fanciful. I imagine she already wore black boots. Fika's resistance only encouraged Lens's brutishness. Owen could not so easily defend himself. Another memory Owen shared in that bathroom stall retold the day that Lens Monk discovered that Owen Arbend was not only quiet. Owen Arbend could not cry out for help. Lens was old enough to be punished for his more worrisome delinquent acts. He was nearly expelled for pouring bleach into a goldfish tank, and again for vomiting inside another student's desk during snack time. Lens had taken to plucking dead mice from his father's traps and force-feeding his classmates fuzz sandwiches. I suppose wedgies were growing dull. Though I've so far avoided sandwiches from Lens, this is no stretch to believe. On this day, Fika had stayed home sick. Where home was, she neglected to say. The Arbens are quieter about the past than even I am. I do not needle. What choice had Owen but to walk back alone with Lens pattering behind him, spitting on his back without Fika to cuss him away? Under a bridge by the canal, Lens waited. When no one else was around to see, he yanked Owen up by his backpack, pried open his jaws and jammed a dead baby mouse between them before clamping his mouth shut. Most people would have shoved such a repulsive thing out with their tongues. They would have screamed, called attention to their plight. Owen could not. His tonguelessness meant he could not spit, and Lens held his arms behind his back so he could not pull the mouse out with his fingers. Owen could either choke or swallow. He swallowed. Lens released him. He forced Owen's mouth open. He saw neither mouse nor tongue inside. He gagged and threw Owen down against the pavement. After that, Owen became a primary target. Lens sought him out on a daily basis. He waited in the street outside Owen's home, waited with pockets full of stones and glass and decaying mice, waited with no expression, waited for Owen to whimper. I looked at Owen, delicate features, wide eyes. You may drop out of school? He nodded. You should not. I've been reading a great deal of late. About, heroism. Dropping out won't help the others he's tormenting. And what good could it do you? He knows where you live. He will wait. We hung our heads, listened to the sounds of a girl in the next stall vomiting the entire contents of her stomach into the porcelain toilet. Why do you care? Shot Fika suddenly. Owen stared. I restrained a click. It is only that I feel responsible for you. Hands and faces moving. This was going on for ages before you got punched in the gym. You don't owe us crap, Owen says. I feel indebted to you. He frowned. Fika sniggered. Don't mock me. Let me help. Few people have been so kind to me. Owen stared, nodded. Fika slammed her fist against the wall. Someone in line squeaked in surprise. Look, if you're really looking to prove you're thankful, there is something you can do. Owen blinked at her. I lifted my head. You can use your supersonic hearing. Stand up to him and scare him off for good. Like a superhero, Oliver? You're suggesting that I, confront him? No, she said. I'm suggesting you beat the living shit out of him. Owen Arbond is sitting across from me in the sickly pod. This is my first handwritten letter, Oliver. Owen is not wearing his flat cap today. He sips water, not coffee. Perhaps he is only halfway pretentious. You were my first friend, Ollie. Could this be another? He smiles rarely, but those smiles are bright. He may not speak, but he laughs in waterfalls, dolphin-wavy as that may sound. I can't read his hands. I can read the notes he writes me, read the rhythm of his feet and fingertips across floors and tables. Owen hasn't returned to Bernholt Regan because Lentz is on the prowl once more, pushing faces into urinals. I see Owen elsewhere. He is always pleased to see me. He does not care that I have no eyes, just as I do not care that he has no tongue. Perhaps we could both forget ourselves in not caring. I am as human as he is. Outside school, he is constantly fiddling with things, picking up pens and tossing them or doodling on napkins. He redeems his silence with perpetual motion. Often we go to the Kneipe to watch Fika spout poetry. He taps a foot in annoyance. I, in my teeth, and then we smirk at each other. For once I am grateful not to have eyes. I do not think I could make proper eye contact with Owen Arbond. Now he taps his feet against the floor. Just from the way he is going heel to toe with his shoes, I can tell he is getting impatient. Owen has an uncanny sense of rhythm. I knew this the moment I saw him manning those turntables at Partyganger. His wondrous musicality would probably extend to his pitch. If he could enunciate, I believe he would have a beautiful voice. Owen is sighing now, looking at me pointedly. Almost, almost, I tell him. I'll finish writing later. Fika is performing soon. I do not want to face her glare while she rattles off Radiohead or Deer Hunter lyrics. She does not realize she is a cliché. She gets offended. I embody your old optimism, Ollie, Ollie, up and free. My friends and I... Friends, Ollie? Are going to prevent Lenz from hurting anyone else. Fika is on stage glaring at me, giving me the finger. Owen looks at me with hope. Perhaps that is what friendship is. Spending time with people who aren't repulsed by you, even when they should be. I will not fail them. I am not my mother. I am better than she was. I used to dislike everyone. Even now I don't know what to expect from the people around me, Oliver. Alone, in a crowd. Now the crowd is unfolding before me, and it is full of life and terror and wonder. All this because you told me to stand up, Oliver Paolo. I am more than nothing because of you. If you are swallowed in grief or in pain, please know this. My life is forever improving. Please, whatever you're about to tell me, don't ever doubt your worth. Don't worry that I will turn away from you. You made me real, Ollie. Your dearest friend, Mo.
Chapter 19. The Phone. Let's get the needling out of the way. Why do you keep mentioning your mother all of a sudden? Who was she? I want to know, Moritz, even if I stopped asking. It's cool that you think so highly of me, but you've got me on a pedestal. You may be my best friend, but you can never be here. And sometimes it just sucks. I'm happy for you, but sad for me. And then guilty for feeling sad for me when I should just be happy for you, and then I feel like an ass in general. It's also cool that you found friends and more in Kreisig, and now I have some idea about why you didn't want to talk romance. Owen means a lot to you, doesn't he? I get it. Are you guys really planning on beating up Lentz? I'm glad you're feeling more heroic, but... well, that seems like a weird thing to bond over. Then again, it's been nosebleeds all along. I really could use a friend out here in the woods. I wish I could meet you. Really. Mom's back in the house again today, but she's white as snow. Did you know her hair's been falling out? I've seen it on the floor, on couch cushions, strands of blonde that catch the light and look almost like electricity. Before, I thought she wore hand-woven wigs for fun. I keep thinking about the medical bills that arrive at the mailbox. Her trips to the pharmacy. Maybe I've been ignoring it all this time. It's been here all along, her being sick. But somehow it's getting deeper and darker in the woods. I wrote the remainder of our camping trip. I'm sending it to you today. Maybe it'll explain why I've been so haphazard and stupid up until now. Or maybe not. Is it really summer already? I should go right in the living room, where it's warmer, but I can hear Mom wheezing down there. It's quieter up here. Here's the last part of my autobiography, Moritz. Here's what Mom wanted to distract me from. Do you know what some kids at school started calling me when I first moved out here? I shook my head. I felt paralyzed after that face-mashing session. My half-frozen foot was resting on a warm stone by the campfire, my sock and boot drying out beside it. Liz sat across from me, eyes shining in the dark. White trash. I don't get it. You're not even pale. And yeah, sometimes you're muddy, but that's not the same as being garbage. Oh, Ollie. Sometimes I think it's awesome that you don't know about things like this. Other times I think... you think what? But right then we both almost jumped out of our skins when a huge crack broke the night air. Maybe they're lighting off fireworks across the lake? That was only one sound. Someone started hunting season early? Hope they've got a license. Liz frowned in the firelight. It's too dark to be hunting. I mean, sometimes hunters wear night vision goggles because deer get pretty active early in the morning, but it's not morning. Maybe Uncle Joe is trying to get a lead on the competition. That's his venison, damn it. Maybe. She pulled up the hood on her sweatshirt. I'm going to go ask him if he heard it. Hand me that lantern. My foot isn't dry yet. Wait here, then. But I was already hopping along behind her with one boot on, wincing when I stepped on acorns and pine cones barefoot. The blind felt a lot farther away in the dark. Fog had crept off the lake to curl around trees, around our waists. I huddled near Liz as she walked, still really aware of how close she was. Every few steps or so, something on the forest side of us scurried along the ground, crackling on leaves and brushing through undergrowth. Probably only squirrels, but we picked up our pace. The water seemed too dull, somehow. It wasn't reflecting the moon. By the time we turned down the trail toward the deer blind, we were jogging. "Man, he's going to laugh at us." The moment we burst into the clearing beneath the blind, Liz put her hand over her mouth. "It's a good thing we'd learned our lesson years ago about buying sturdy lanterns. It didn't break when she dropped it." Liz rushed forward in the dark. When I scrabbled to lift the lantern up again, I saw why. Junkyard Joe was sprawled at the foot of the tree, like a dead thing. "I think you're the only one I could talk to about this, Moritz. I can't even describe how it felt. If my handwriting's worse, it's because my hands are shaking, and it's hard not to smear the ink. Sorry."
"Oh, God. Oh, God."
Liz was shaking him. In her panic, she was rattling him so much that it almost looked like he was seizing.
"Don't shake him. If he's hurt, don't shake him. That's,
I couldn't think. I couldn't think. Bad for his anatomy.
"Uncle Joe? Oh, God, Uncle Joe?" "He was shot? Has he been shot? Who shot him? Was he shot?" "I don't know. I can't see anything. I can't really see without a damn flashlight, can I?"
Some part of my brain registered that there wasn't any blood. I looked up the ladder to the blind. It was hard to be sure in the lantern light, but what we'd heard was the sound of one of the rotten plywood floorboards falling through. It looked like he had fallen 20 feet to the ground.
"He fell. He just fell, Liz. You can see it. You can see the boards gave out. He just fell." "Just? He's not moving. I can't tell if he's breathing. Oh, God. Oh, God."
"He may have broken his spine?"
"Oh, God, Ollie, we need help. You need to go get help. Call someone."
I kept shaking my head.
"I can't call someone. Phones. I can't."
She was tearing at her hair, snot running out of her nose. "God, I was breathing so loud, and when I blinked, I almost heard the sound of my eyelids in my ears. Almost like you. But this was nothing out of a comic book. This made no narrative sense. This was a freak accident that already I could see did nothing for any of us. Didn't allow any of us, not Liz, not me, not Joe, poor, motionless Joe, to develop as characters. This was,
"Go get help! My phone!"
I don't know how I had time to be hurt, but I did.
"You brought your phone? Go get it! You could hold the book light so you could hold a damn phone! In the tent! Run!"
"Let me check first, whether he's got a pulse."
"Go, Oliver!"
Maybe she should have gone. But how could I ask her to leave him? How could I say anything when I couldn't think? I couldn't think, Mo. It felt like I was dreamwalking again, like the day I met her. But I was running instead, and it was dark and cold, and I couldn't feel my foot. And when I got to the campfire, I nearly tripped and fell right into it. This was nightmare walking? I tore open Liz's tent, heart thumping against my ribs, grabbed her backpack, and took it out by the fire so that I could see what was inside, and then tore through her clothes, and past her toiletry bag, and through the pack's lining, and finally something stung my hand. The phone had been wrapped up in 2 Ziploc bags, rolled inside her bathing suit, but it was glowing just enough to make me nauseous. Gagging, fighting the tremors, I tried to grab it. But I was way too hyped up, too charged, and when I reached for the phone, it spun away from my hand and smacked against the circle of stones around the fire pit.
Shit!
I scampered after it again, but it was repelled again, almost into the coals. I upended the bag of extra tent poles and pulled it over my shaking hand like a glove. It made the slightest difference, and I was able to pick up the phone. I could feel the veins in my hand popping, but I held tight. After a second, it buzzed against my palm, and I squeezed tighter. After that, it didn't sting quite so much. I ran. I ran, but I already knew. I'd known when I first saw him there. The way his torso was twisted, the way his body was breaking so many basic anatomical rules, there was no way he wouldn't be paralyzed at the very least. No way he would walk or sit on the porch and fake bird watching. And I ran anyhow. Nothing had changed at the clearing. Liz was still shaking him, still pressing her ear to his chest. Joe's eyes were closed. His face was pale, very still. And I knew again. His spine was broken. I was biting my tongue so hard that I was piercing flesh, and the arm that held the phone was numb all the way up to my shoulder. Dry heaves racked my chest, but all I could really think about was how I should tell her, but I couldn't tell her. Liz looked at me with wild, hopeful eyes when I burst out of the foliage. If she realized, she was pretending she didn't. I held the phone up and felt my head clear a bit when I handed it over.
Here, but I thought there was no signal out here. That was years ago.
She pressed a button on its side and tapped the screen. I waited for the phone to reflect her, but the screen buzzed to white for only a second before hissing back to black, to nothingness.
It's not working. What the hell? What's wrong with it?
She tapped ineffectually at the screen.
Oh, no.
I pressed the heels of my palms into my temples, but it wasn't enough.
No, 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 no! What? Did you drop it?
I didn't.
I swear I didn't. It just... I couldn't touch it. What's wrong with it?
The screen was empty. I took a step back. Then another.
Electromagnetism. Oh, God. You shorted it? He's dying and you... Anyone else here and this wouldn't have... Couldn't have. But no, I brought you.
I know she was beyond upset. I know she was devastated, but I can't forget the way her face looked when she said that.
You could have gone for the phone, if I'm so predictably terrible.
Then she was standing, holding it out in front of her, up to my face. I winced and shook my head. Blank screen, but I still felt tiny needles pricking my skin.
What are we supposed to do?
Her face was collapsing in on itself, an imploding star.
What are we?
She pushed the phone closer to me. I put my hand in front of my eyes, but I shouldn't have. I shouldn't have, because with the sight of her and the almost corpse of him and the volume of my breathing in my ears and everything else, of course I felt bee stings in my fingertips, and suddenly I had repelled it again. The phone smacked her in the mouth with enough force to tilt her head back slightly, enough to knock against her teeth before it fell to the forest floor. She whimpered and covered her mouth and stared at me like I was...
Liz...
I reached for her, and she withdrew, eyes wide.
Go. Get away from me.
Liz, I'm so sorry, I mumbled.
The campers. I'll go get the other campers. Maybe anyone else, and this couldn't happen.
She was so quiet. But there was no way I'd miss a word of it, even as I backed away from that look in her eyes.
Anyone in the whole world, and instead it was you.
I stumbled alone in the dark, heading in the vague direction of the other campground across the lake, falling over logs and my own feet and almost falling into the water again, scraping my arms on branches and brambles all but invisible in the dark. Away from the clearing, away from the lantern, away from Joe, away from Liz. I followed foggy gray trails of electric smog to the opposite side of the lake, trails that became tinged with color the longer I stumbled along them. I kept falling, kept eating dirt, and I couldn't figure out why, because I didn't notice that I had sliced my foot open until hours later, maybe after midnight or maybe close to dawn, what felt like eons after I left the clearing where Liz and Junkyard Joe... Dead. He must have been dead.
You don't know that. She wouldn't let you check his pulse. She didn't even want you to touch him, freak.
Freak, freak, freak. All I could see the whole time I was wandering through the dark were the same stupid images spinning through my head. Liz's face when she told me to go. The stillness of Joe. The kiss, her face, the terrible kiss, the dark, her face. Firelight filled my eyes, but I didn't realize I had arrived at the campground until I walked right into some man who wore a fluorescent orange vest.
Help? Jesus, kid, where did you come from? Aren't you freezing? He's vomited all over himself.
Fire and light and noise and, yes, lines and clouds of electric colors that were stretching out to greet me. The smog of their trucks, the buzz of their lamps, all stretching out fingers to hold me. I would be happy to meet them, happy for them to shut me off.
I don't need help. Joe does, except if he's dead. He doesn't need help, and maybe he's dead, but he's over there, and you should go. Go. Help him, because I'm a freak and I can't do it, okay? I can't do it, and I can't do phones, and I can't...
Here, son, said one of the men.
He held up something that was buzzing blue and sizzling gold fuzzing light and wrapped it around my shoulders. And with the weight of the electric heating blanket on my shoulders, I was gone, gone, gone. She was right, you know. If it had been anyone else, it wouldn't have happened that way. Oh. Chapter 20. The Cat.
Moritz, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. If that's what it takes, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. I was an idiot. I'm always an idiot. Why did you stop writing me? Please, you have to talk to me. Please. I know you aren't ether. I know you feel, you think, I know you care. I never thought you were a void. Where are you? What's happened in the weeks since we last spoke? What should I do? What would you do if you were me? How can I ever expect Liz to come hang out after all that? I don't think I can answer any questions without your help anymore. I can't focus enough to think of answers, and if this is a laser beam, then it's getting wide enough to swallow the world or something. And that doesn't even make sense, and I'm sorry for that, too. Moritz, I don't know what's worse. That maybe you never got my last letter, and I have to write it all over again? Or that maybe you did get it, and you're so disgusted that you don't want to speak to me anymore. Has something happened to you? Stop writing, Mom says. Maybe it was the wrong idea to write. Stop writing. It's not therapy. Stop needling, because maybe that's all we're doing to each other. Experiments of our own? Sorry, Moritz. But I didn't finish it. We're not fully up to date yet. Please let me finish. Please listen to me, and I'll be quick, and there won't be any fuss and hoopla. See, Joe didn't die, after all. It was touch and go for a while. He was comatose for a month, and with every day that he was sleeping, I was almost wishing he would die because he was dragging out my guilt. And yeah, you can say the fall wasn't actually my fault. I've heard that from everyone, even from Liz once, when she stopped by to tell me he'd woken up, and the doctors, they told him he'd be paralyzed from the hips down probably for as long as he was living. That one doctor said he broke sections of his lower spine, vertebrae lumbalis, and tore nerve clusters on impact, and that getting a medical helicopter out there sooner probably wouldn't have helped, probably. And even during the early days when I was in my sickbed, half comatose myself with stitches in my foot, and Mom was there telling me, shush, and it's not your fault. And Auburn Stash kept holding my hand, and he wouldn't even smile his goofy smile, and he said too, it's not your fault. Even then I heard, probably. We all heard about the doctor saying probably. Probably means maybe he could have been walking now. Maybe. Probably, maybe. And then last week, while I was waiting for you to send me a letter, when I was waiting for anything, Dorian Gray died. He just curled up on my bed and didn't get up again when I tried to shove him off my pillow as usual. My cat? That wasn't my fault either, because that cat was really old, and he meowed whenever you touched his back or scratched him under the chin. Didn't purr, but meowed in pain when you stroked him because of arthritis, and he couldn't even really jump up on the sofa anymore. And things that are old die sometimes, and there's nothing you can do about it but bury old things under a pine tree in your backyard. Or things that are young die too. Especially when they do secretive work in laboratories, and they really shouldn't. Because that can ruin a family and a kid's life, I think. I'm starting to put the pieces together, and maybe being a lab experiment is the same as being sick after all. Because we don't live in colorful panels with speech bubbles and exciting noises. Moritz, please. I don't know who else to talk to. I can't think straight. The house won't stop moaning, and my fingertips are raw from folding origami flowers because I don't know what to do or what to play or read to make this better. Maybe my fingertips will peel away, just rub away, and the bones will poke through, and then how will I hold the pen properly to write you because bones can't grip without skin, even phalange bones. Then I just end up bleeding all over the paper so you have to answer me soon. To make it stop. Moritz? Please. Chapter 21. The Fishbowl.
It's been so long since I last heard from you, and I'm happy to report that I haven't given up on you yet. I'm still writing you pointless letters every week, even though my autobiography is pretty much up to date. It's not like things have been all that eventful here, so I'll just keep telling you about the books I'm reading, and about building bike ramps, and about baking cheesecakes. German double chocolate ones, strawberry ones, and blueberry ones, but not blackberry ones. Which I've been getting into. But there aren't enough people to eat the cakes, so they end up moldering a bit in the icebox. But we try to eat them anyhow. Mom is looking younger in the summer weather. She isn't prancing around sniffing daisies or anything, but she's been sitting on the porch and teaching me to knit lately. I think maybe we're both doing better. I mean, I've come to terms with losing things, and she must have done that ages ago. I never see that lab coat. I don't even bother needling her about my dad anymore. Anyhow, I try not to worry about you. I try really hard, just like I try to focus. I really hope you aren't dead or something, or Lentz didn't beat the crap out of you again. But if you are lying in a hospital bed somewhere, I think I'll keep writing you anyway, because it does help me, and it gives me a reason to write. I can pretend, if that's okay. I know Liz wasn't into pretending, except for when she was pretending I could have a living room like any other kid who maybe wouldn't let her uncle get paralyzed out in the cold woods. Focus, Ollie, focus. Who'd have thought I could miss someone I've never actually met? Me. I've thought that. I miss tons of things I've never seen, and now you, most of all. Something kind of miraculous happened the other day, and I need to tell you about it. Liz rode her bike up my driveway on a Wednesday afternoon. I wasn't waiting for her. Mom and I were actually out back deadheading multicolored daylilies in the flower beds that border the house, so she ended up having to walk around over the uneven grass to find us. She didn't shout, "I'm here," like she used to, but Mom still heard her coming. "Ollie, don't freak out." Mom squeezed my arm. I turned around, squinting in the sun, and there she was, like she'd never left. And for a moment I wanted to just grin at her, like of course we were fine, but then I could see ages between us. Months of standing in the driveway by myself. My throat constricted and my ears burned and I couldn't say a damn thing because what if it came out as screaming? I dropped the shriveled yellow flower head. She put her hand over her mouth. Her hair was growing out and it seemed darker against the bright blue sky. She hadn't bothered with braids. Not a speck of muck on her. I almost didn't recognize her. "Hey." More of a whisper than a scream. "How's it hanging?" "Oh, Ollie," she said, kneeling down and wrapping her arms around me. I'm not going to lie, Moritz. It felt really nice to feel her arms again. And she smelled awesome, like sugar or something. But in my head, she was still standing in the forest clearing, looking at me with that face. So I gently pushed her away and stood up. It was weird. I was way taller than her now.
"I could play the xylophone on your rib cage.
Glockenspiel, please.
Have you both gone on a hunger strike? I want to stuff burgers down your throats. I mean, what happened?"
Mom smiled at her. "We're just going through some growth spurts, Elizabeth."
"What? Even you, Mrs. Pello?"
"I'm a late bloomer. And you never really grow up." After 7 seconds, she climbed to her feet.
"I'll go get us some lemonade, hey? Like a good motherly stereotype."
She left us there on the sunlit lawn.
"Ollie," Liz said, "you look terrible."
"What a lovely thing to tell me on a lovely summer's day. And speaking of lovely, you look lovely.
I mean it. You and your mom, if I'd known..."
"If you'd known, you could have stopped by every week to comment on how terrible we look." I laughed and began trudging toward the porch.
"Freak, freak, freak. Oliver," she said, "why won't you look at me?
The sun's in my eyes." But even when we reached the shade, I didn't really look at her.
"So, what brings you to our humble abode, Liz? Looking lovely, as already stated."
She didn't smile.
"Lovely, huh?
Yep, I guess high school still suits you then? Well, high school isn't actually that different from middle school, turns out. I wouldn't know, of course. Ollie. Look, Liz, what do you want? And here I was trying for a sunny disposition, Moritz. I was trying, but it's hard. Because you told me to be honest with myself, and honestly, I wasn't feeling very sunny inside. I felt like something small that was hiding in the dark until Liz lifted the log to see me squirm. I want to go to the junkyard, but not by myself. There are some things there in the trailer that I want to pick up. Some things Uncle Joe wants in his hospital room. I'm the only one who knows where he keeps things. I was the only one who visited him. Oh, but I wasn't really visiting him, you know? Did her voice crack? You weren't, huh? She put her hand on her cheek and looked out at the lawn. I wasn't. And that makes me feel worse about it. This was where I ran away to, I guess. I shrugged. This is all a bit too grown up for me. I just want to go inside and play with my Legos, like a good little hermit. Please, Ollie. Funny how she isn't even fazed by my sarcasm anymore. I guess she shouldn't be, since I learned half of it from her. It probably bores her. Let me get my shoes on. Liz shook her head. No, not today. Next week, maybe. Why wait? It sounds so very fun. I have plans. Plans? She blinked at me. You want me to say it? I'm meeting friends. For friends' things. For high school things and electronic music and electric lights and all sorts of power lines. Happy? Oh, wicked! This was all wrong, but I couldn't seem to stop it. You can tell them all how terrible I look. She stood up. Why are you being this way? I'm Captain Tact. Fine, whatever. I'll see you next week. Maybe she used to run away to me, but now it wasn't to, but from. One word, a whole world of difference, Moritz. Sometimes I don't appreciate language after all. When I went back inside alone, Mom was standing just past the screen door in the hallway. There was no lemonade in sight, and she was looking just like she did on the day when Liz knocked on the door all caked in muck. Well, almost like that. You could play the Glockenspiel on her ribcage now, after all. It might have been the perfect time to needle her about Dad. A breeze could bowl her over. Probably her walls would have crumbled if I mentioned the lab. Seeing her like that, it didn't even cross my mind. The following Wednesday, I met Liz at the power line, and we trekked through the same old trails to get to Joe's place. But Liz didn't stop to pick up a single pudding stone, and the junkyard looked more like a graveyard than ever. The trailer at the center of it was just as abandoned as the rest of it now. Man, this is just awful. My mutter rang against aluminum skeletons. You don't always have to say what you're thinking. Her lip trembled, and I thought for the briefest second that I didn't know who she was anymore, that she might be the type of girl to collapse in the leaves, and then I could hold her or help her up, and... Liz walked toward the trailer. Wait here. Obviously. Soon she was up on the porch and inside the trailer. Hard not to think about the first time I'd stood here waiting, and how different that was. Deja vu is pretty common when you never leave a square mile of land. Why did she want me here? It could have been anyone else, right? Again, I wasn't expecting her to come out so quickly. I never gave you this back. She held the old fishbowl I'd worn to the power line. I grinned. Oh, wow. How thoughtful. You know, I've been so lost without it. Wow. Ollie. I mean, I was really hoping you'd drag me out here to remind me about the uncle I almost killed and then re-gift me with the symbol of our friendship. I laughed. You know what? You should shatter it. That would be really symbolic. I don't think you almost killed him. She whispered. Oh, well, that's a relief. I'm a freak, but not a murderer. Great. Well, let me do the honors. I'm more used to breaking spines and phones, you know, but I can do this. I can break this. Her eyes were welling. Ollie. I snatched the bowl from her hands and threw it against the porch. You may wonder why I was trying so hard to make the girl I'm lovesick over bawl her eyes out. Maybe I just wanted to know whether I could still make her feel things. Of course, the bowl failed to shatter. The glass was thick, and it bounced once and rolled away along the wooden boards. I reached for it, but pulled my hand back quickly. Those tendrils of electricity were still itching their way up from under the porch, and they nipped at me. I cringed and recoiled from the buzzing heat, but when Liz tried to pull me away, I shrugged her off.
Enough, Ollie! I just can't worry about you on top of everything else.
You don't have to worry about me.
Look at yourself! You look like you've got cancer, or like you've forgotten how to hold a fork,
or like I spent months alone in a cabin in the dark, huh? Maybe I've got scurvy, hey?
Never mind.
She was stomping away, maybe like Fika does, arms flat against her sides, hands clenched into fists. She no longer looked remotely like she was going to cry.
We're just talking about you again.
Who else do I know? I threw my hands up and followed her. I don't have all your amazingly distracting high school friends. She spun around to confront me, and part of that terrifying expression from the clearing was there on her face again, and I almost swallowed my tongue. Almost, but not really, because we've been through that.
He was my uncle. My family.
Her shoulders sagged.
And he's just this stranger in a wheelchair now, and always will be, and you were there, and no matter how I try to think about it, no matter that I know it wasn't your fault, you were there.
Please, just stop.
No matter what, you were there. And when I look at you, I see him lying there, and I just can't remember you any other way than jumping out of those bushes and handing me a phone that didn't work, that wouldn't work, that can't work, can never work with you.
We were standing in the center of the yard now, right where she'd set up my living room. So you're angry and sad because your phone doesn't like me?
Try to be serious for once.
I took a few steps back and leaned against the nearest decrepit vehicle. The rust-eaten metal seemed to give beneath me.
Okay,
I said after a deep breath. Okay. Makes sense.
Ollie.
Nah, it's totally cool. I grinned. It felt wrong, but I was going for it. Then why didn't you have one of your new friends come out here with you today? Why ask me, murderer?
I told you,
murderer of phones.
Ollie, you're still my best friend. I just had to stop coming here. Because I'm not like you,
Liz. She wasn't saying freak, but that's what I was hearing.
Listen to me.
She closed her eyes. I spent so much time wishing that this was the world. I sat in school and just waited for Wednesdays, because on Wednesdays I wasn't just some piece of trash, some gray person that no one bothered thinking about.
You're every color, Liz,
I blurted because my throat was burning.
I know you think that, Ollie.
Her expression softened.
But don't you see how messed up that is? That the only time I felt important was around someone who didn't know any better?
Ouch. I tried to laugh. She sounded like you now, Moritz.
Don't be hurt. I'm not a hermit. I can't live out here in the woods. You're my best friend, but you can't be my only friend.
We're best friends who can't look at each other. I laughed. Maybe we should start wearing big black goggles around, too.
What?
But thinking about you, Moritz, just choked me up a bit, so I tried laughing again.
Well, next time, bring the other friends along, too.
She pursed her lips.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's have everyone over for my next birthday.
That'll give you plenty of time to warn them not to climb into deer blinds when I'm around. She shook her head.
I don't feel like I'm the same person out here.
Are you a worse person? She shook her head again.
That's not what I'm saying.
Then have them stop by. I bet they're curious about the local leper, too. I can't leave the woods.
Let me meet all those people you think are more interesting than you, and let me be the judge.
You don't have to tell them you kissed me. God, the look she gave me. I'm not embarrassed of you. I just don't want them to be dumb about it. Not you, them. People can be so dumb sometimes. I drew myself up. Yeah, you shouldn't worry. I've heard from my best friend that I'm pretty likable. Or I used to be. Not sure what happened. Well, maybe I'm sure. But I think at some point I wasn't always boring enough to drown in or whatever. I don't know what you're talking about, Ollie. You aren't making any sense. I held my arms open wide. Tell them I'll show them a good time. Invite the whole damn school. The circus is open. Her eyes narrowed. I realized I couldn't tell what she was thinking, whether she was angry or sad or annoyed or frightened or what. She stood up and held her finger up to my face. Look, I'll do it. I'll ask everyone to come out for your birthday. But only if you promise me something. What, fair lady? Start taking care of yourself, doofus. She wiped her eyes. Eat something. Look after your mom. Start giving a crap again. Because that's what we've got to do.
We have to start giving craps? To whom?
I mean it, weirdo. She jabbed me in the chest. You're important to me.
Even if you can't stand my face.
Yes. Even then.
Okay, I said.
Okay. Come on. Help me sort this stuff out.
Liz spent a couple of hours going in and out of the trailer, pulling out odds and ends, cleaning out the fridge and going through the closets. It wasn't a big trailer, but it seemed Joe had filled it up with himself. She was collecting photographs and books and throwing them into her backpack alongside his camera.
Do you want any of these?
She gestured to the collection of taxidermied birds and rabbits she deposited on the porch. Their glass eyes were catching the afternoon sunlight so that the animals almost looked alive again.
My symbolic fishbowl should be enough, thanks.
The afternoon was growing chilly when we walked back to the driveway. Liz stopped beside the power line. Her bike was parked beside the post.
Why didn't your parents come out here with you?
She shrugged.
Mom still wasn't really feeling up to it. She and Uncle Joe were pretty close growing up. And after what happened, I think she feels guilty for growing apart or something. She's basically renting a room at the hospital.
Oh.
Keep your promise.
She pointed that old accusatory finger at me, but lowered it slowly.
Are you going to be all right, Ollie?
And the first thing I thought was no. Not now that Moritz doesn't write me. But then I remembered how I don't know how to feel about anything anymore, about Mom or you or anyone. So I opened my mouth and let my jaw hang for a second before replying.
Just dandy. Will you be back next week?
I wished I hadn't asked. Pathetic.
I might be busy.
Yeah. No biggie. Well, tell your friends about the party. Tell them it'll be a real riot. She said.
See you around, Oliver.
And she pedaled away through the curtain of tangerine light, and she couldn't see how the streaks lit up her skin so that when she was beyond them, she looked like an amber light going out. Please write me. Ollie. Chapter 22. The Deer Blind. Moritz. This birthday party I made Liz promise to, I'm going to turn it out. It's going to be a party those kids will never forget. It's a month away, and that gives me a month to make it awesome. I told Mom, and at first she was all apprehensive, but then she totally got on board, and now she's at least as excited as I am, plotting party favors and sketching out plans for how we'll rearrange the cabin. I don't want to spoil the party for you, but it's going to kick arsh. Also, there's something else. Liz has started visiting again. Not a lot, but every now and then. Twice since the day I failed to shatter the symbolic fishbowl. I tried to be less angsty, already sick of that word, and now it's being retired. It was kind of a struggle because I asked her to pass me the book light again, like old times.
Sure it won't hit me in the face?
September. Liz is back at school now. This year she started wearing eyeliner, like some demented Egyptian princess.
and her clothes don't fit her like they used to, or else I never noticed before. They're snug, to say the least, and she's not just a tree-climbing stick insect like she used to be and I still am. I smiled. I wouldn't want to mess up your makeup. She rolled her eyes, and I pulled the battered old light from the pocket of my hoodie. I handed it to her. She began our mantra. You'll never hear a new wave, or a dentist's drill, or the bell chime between classes, or... She stared at the old book light and sighed. What right did she have to be bored? I held my hands up. Here. She passed it to me, but for a single moment there was pity in her eyes. That was something I'd never seen there. It made me drop what I'd caught. Oh, Ollie, she frowned. If it hurts, let's stop. It's just sort of... cruel. I picked it right back up, but Liz wasn't looking at me. She was looking at my room, and the books and models and telescope and skeleton and puzzles and such. And then her eyes caught sight of the massive pile of letters on the table. Did you know you've written me half a book by now? What are these? I wanted to jump up and shove them away for some reason, but I didn't. Letters from my pen pal. He lives in Kreuzig. That's a city in Germany. Really? Well, he sure is devoted. Yeah, he was. He was sort of my hero. I actually said that, Moritz, because it's the truth. Sort of, huh? I've heard writing letters can be therapeutic. The light in my hand was building in pressure, but I didn't release it. Not after that look she gave me, Mo. This room feels like home. I scratched my chin theatrically. Profound. Yes, very profound. She didn't laugh. I mean it, Ollie. This was where I wanted to be growing up. This was where I was happy. You love your parents. You never shut up about them. Yeah, she said. But they shut up about me plenty. She took the light from me. Her fingers brushed mine, and I remembered suddenly standing by Marl Lake with her. She must have remembered, too. But for us, that memory was immediately followed by the one of the man who fell in the forest. She pulled her hand away. I cleared my throat. 1 month till the big day. Did you tell everyone to come? Tell them to prepare for the hermit party? She nodded. I will, yeah. I will. Promise? I shot for nonchalant. Is just chalant a thing? You know more about English than I do. Well, you're not looking so cancerous anymore, after all. All those kids will be disappointed. Nah, you're still plenty ugly. Her lips twitched. But you're looking at me now. I wasn't sure whether she was about to say something or not, and then the way I looked at her might have changed her mind, and she left with the book light still in her hand, like she was confiscating it. The next time she came, she didn't bring it back. I had a dream about you, Moritz. It was really weird. We were both crouching up in Joe's deer blind. Even though I've never met you, I knew it was you because you just had these gaping black holes where eyes should be. I know you don't, but dreams are like that. And we were looking out the window, and you were pointing at deer and hares and things, but I just kept seeing white static, white lines, and saying, I can't see anything. I can't see anything. And you just smiled at me and said, I don't know if it was a good or a bad dream. Can I tell you what the worst thing about your silence is? I mean, one of the worst things? It ruins your character arc. No, listen, I mean it. In a decent book, you would have been allowed to, like, grow up and get the girl. Sorry, boy, right? And save the day before vanishing forever. Your disappearance doesn't make any narrative sense. It's been driving me crazy. I keep thinking of stories where similar things happen, where friends or loved ones vanish. And do you know what usually happens? The ones they left behind chase after them, through hell or through gates of truth, or through magic wardrobes, or across oceans aflame in gasoline fires, or through collapsing black holes, by magic or science or willpower and mental muscles. They go out and they find the lost ones. I would do that if I could, Moritz. But I can't. I can no more go looking for you than I can go moonwalking. Even if I found you dangling off a cliff, I couldn't pull you up without dropping you when your pacemaker triggered one of my seizures. More than ever, I'm powerless. And so this must mean you're not gone forever, because you've been writing to me like a fantasy character from the best books, like a kid pulling a sword from a stone.